again on the show. Mike Gittins from the War Report. What's up, buddy?
Not much, Mike. I appreciate you having me, as always, to talk a little Auburn sports here. It's been... I know we're going to talk a lot of football, but boy, it's been some drama on the basketball side with Auburn winning the NIT and people all over social media trying to convince me that it's a bad thing that somehow they played five extra games and won five extra games. I don't get it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you, Mike. I mean, I do want to have you on to talk spring football more than anything else, but I did see your viral post, and that made me think, hey, I got to get Mike back on the show. And again, I'm not here to call out other media members, and I know you're not either, but, you know, at the end of the day, can you discuss your feelings on Auburn's decision to play in the NIT, and then they obviously went on to win it? You know, I think... In this era, Mike, I mean, these guys are professionals now, right? So if your team has an opportunity to keep playing, these guys are getting paid to play for the program. I don't think we should ever have an opt-out again, even in an NIT, if these guys are going to take all this money.
I agree 100%. And that was the point in one of my tweets was, everyone's complaining about money ruining the game, and now you're getting mad at kids for just wanting to play for the love of the game. You know, like, that drives me insane. So don't talk out of both sides of your mouth on this issue, right? If you know, like you said, they're getting paid. Stephen Pearl said in an interview, he said it wasn't even a question in his mind. He said, guys, we're playing. But the players also wanted to play. They told him that, coach, we want to play. Keyshawn Hall went to the other players and said, guys, let's not let the last thing we're remembered for be losing. I think that's a great motivation for any player to say, look, man, we've got a chance. We're not too good to play in the NIT. And they went and they won it. And I would challenge anybody to, now that we know they've won it, to explain to me how any of that turned out negative for Auburn. Now, I will admit this. If you go and you lose, then you know what the narratives about that are going to be. So in my mind, with where Bruce Pearl has taken the Auburn basketball program, it was an all or nothing for Auburn, Mike. It was win it all or face all the storylines that come along with you going to a lesser tournament and then losing to teams that are, you know, viewed as lesser than you. But that's not what happened. They won it. And I don't know if you got a chance to catch that final, but in pretty dramatic fashion, they forced a turnover on a 5 seconds with 8 seconds left, down two, and then down three, and Kevin Overton hits a three to send it to overtime. That was made for TV. That was primetime stuff. I enjoyed it. And, you know, obviously the players enjoyed it because they won.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I just had to lead with that, because that, like you said, that was putting out a little fire there on the plains, so to speak. But hopefully, all the fires are out with football now that we've got Alex Golish leading the Tigers. And I know you, at the War Report, you recently had an exclusive one-on-one with Coach Golish. I'll put a link in the show notes so that our listeners could go check it out. Cannot recommend it enough. Can you just discuss what was maybe the highlights for you getting to interview Alex Golish one-on-one?
Obviously, talking about Byron Brown, and there was a part of the interview where we were going back and forth about the difference between great and elite. And, you know, I said, I called him great, and he said, no, he's elite. And I said, okay, well, coach, what's the dichotomy between great and elite? And he said, a ton of great players, right? He is elite, and he has elite habits, and he does things that make him, he makes plays that great players can't make. Elite players make those plays. They feel like he has elite preparation. He's got elite training. He's got an elite football mind. He's got an elite arm. He's got elite legs. They feel like this guy has been elite and will be elite in the SEC. And when you have that kind of confidence in your quarterback, that tells me that the playbook's going to be wide open this fall. They're going to run, they're going to throw some things at teams that maybe aren't on tape, because you are a lot more confident in your quarterback at Auburn, and you're a lot more confident in the pieces that you have around him at Auburn. So not just the guys who came over from USF, Mike, but the pieces that chose to stay, that, like it or not, were left by Hugh Freeze, and we know his recruiting was elite. So that was part of the draw to come to a coach at Auburn was the roster. You know, a lot of big names decided to leave, but there were a lot of 4-star names that decided to stay. And Alex Golsh now has a hold of these guys, and they seem to be buying into what he's selling.
I didn't know you were allowed to have good quarterback play in a competent offense at Auburn. Is that true?
It has been said by some that is true. It's crazy to think that Auburn feels like they're always one good quarterback away from being a contender. I think history has bared that out over the last, you know, 25, 26 years. We had a press conference with Alex Golsh last Friday, and I asked him about receiver and said, Coach, Auburn hasn't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 1999, Ronnie Daniels. Talk to me about this receiver group. And he said, you know, it's not a specific goal to go out and have a 1,000-yard receiver, but it is a goal to implement a system that allows 1,000-yard receivers to emerge. And he said he was blown away by that stat because he, you know, in that stretch, you've had multiple undefeated seasons, a Heisman, you've had a national championship, you've got another national championship appearance, and no 1,000-yard receivers. It's actually pretty incredible. I mean, you have to try really hard, I feel like, to fail at that if you're Auburn. And you've had some guys come close, but I think that we could see a guy emerge. And if I had to put money on one, I think it might be Chaz Nimrod. He is a guy that came from USF. He got hurt last season after about 6 games, but they feel like he was on his way to a 1,000-yard season. Had a gangbusters game versus Miami last year. And I'll tell you, there are a few of these kids I do think just because they were playing in the G5, they're going to get overlooked. And look, man, speed is speed. I don't care where you're playing, right? Hands are hands. Talent is talent, no matter where you're playing. And if you elevate all the pieces around a guy like Chaz Nimrod, I think he could do work in the SEC. They might be sleeping on Auburn early. I know you've got some schedule graphics here. Auburn's September. I think there's a chance they could get out of that September 4-0, Mike, with the talent that they have right now.
Yeah, against Baylor in Atlanta, Southern Miss at home, Florida at home, Vanderbilt at home. I didn't know Auburn was allowed to be Vanderbilt, but I guess that could be changing these days too, huh?
No Diego Pavia is a huge relief, I think, for Auburn fans. Let's start at the beginning. Baylor in Atlanta, right? That is a dub. You went out to Baylor last year and you whooped them with Jackson Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
Whooped them. There were certain people all over social media before this matchup trying to tell me that Auburn was going to get run all over by Baylor and Baylor wasn't going to be able to stop scoring on this Auburn defense and Auburn wasn't going to be able to stop the run. Spoiler alert, the opposite of all those things happened. Auburn ran all over Baylor to the tune of 300 yards. Jackson Arnold couldn't be stopped. He threw forward passes that were complete, and the talent gap between Auburn and Baylor was so massive, Hugh Freeze beat them soundly. I called that game, Mike, 38-21. Auburn won that game 38-24. I will never stop talking about that. That is my best call ever since I've been doing media. And people said, well, what do you think? What have you seen that tells you that Auburn's going to score 38 points on a Power 4 team, Mike? And I said, I don't think you guys are underestimating how good Auburn is. I think you're underestimating how bad Baylor is. And the talent gap between these two teams was so wide, it didn't matter. You and I could have called that game and beat Baylor by 3 touchdowns. Auburn beat Baylor so bad, their running back, Bryson Washington, switched jerseys for the next game. He's at Auburn now. Oh, part of that. Again, that's crazy. So, by the way, Bryson Washington looks ridiculous at spring practice right now. That kid is in shape. He's a bigger back than I thought he was, but he might be the biggest back on the roster now. And I think he's going to make a really good 1-2 punch in the SEC with Jeremiah Cobb. Alex Golsh said during our interview, he said in every press conference since, we're going to run the piss out of the football. And I like that. I like that he has that in his mind because they also have a quarterback who they feel like is not just a good running quarterback, but this, and again, verbatim, a good runner of the football, period. So if you combine that with some good backs that can carry, he can be good in spots and he can improv a little bit. And man, I don't know, man, Auburn might run for a lot of yards this season under Alex Golish. And hopefully they get off to a good start in September because that Baylor game is up next. Obviously you got a cupcake in there. And then you open SEC play with Florida and Vanderbilt. Is there a better early season storyline than John Sumrall versus Alex Golish, Mike? Come on, dude. Is there a better storyline than the guy that Auburn reportedly wanted to hire that turned his nose up at them versus the guy they did hire? I can't wait to see that. The bragging rights on that one's going to be amazing.
I could give you one, and it's okay. The same day, and Shane and I are going to be there because it's such a great game. Ole Miss hosting LSU and Lane Quinton. So. But you're right.
Lane Quinton.
But beyond that, yeah, we have been talking about this Auburn-Florida game for several weeks because I think it's not going to define the season for, and certainly not the careers of both of those coaches, but it'll go a long way, I think, year one to see who has a better year, Florida or Auburn. Whoever wins that game is probably going to have a better season.
I would agree with that. The over-under on Florida is 7.5. You and I were talking about this before we started recording. Auburn has a 6.5 over-under right now on FanDuel. I don't understand. I mean, is it about Florida's schedule? Maybe they feel like Florida's schedule is a little bit easier than Auburn's. I mean, I would argue that Auburn's October is a little bit harder than at Georgia, at Ole Miss.
Auburn's October is harder than the Green Bay Packers' October. You know what I mean? So,
I mean, that's the stretch that defines the season. Now, you have a bye week between Tennessee and Georgia, both games on the road. But with Lane Kiffin at LSU and then Trinidad Chambliss getting that extra year of eligibility coming back to Ole Miss, that if they can go 2-2 in that stretch, I think that's a massive accomplishment.
Yeah.
So, you know, Alex Golish, if he wins 7 games in year one, he'll be right on track. Anything over that, bonus. But I do think they can go beyond 7 games. It will be about whether they can snatch 2 in October, though.
And off air, we were also talking about Byron Brown. I know you already referenced him. And I told you I wanted to ask you, you know, could he be the best new quarterback in the SEC? But then we started to think about it. I mean, he doesn't really have a lot of competition. Sam Leavitt, perhaps at LSU, Austin Simmons at Missouri stand out as other new additions. So let me rephrase this, Mike. Could Byron Brown, not that you're outright predicting this, but is there a possibility that he's the best quarterback in the entire SEC next season? Again, it's a little unique because he's following his coach. He's playing in the same system. So there's not going to be that. He fully understands what he's got to, you know, what he's got to do in this offense. What has to happen, you think, for him to be the best quarterback in the conference next year?
To be the best quarterback in the conference, he's going to have to do something similar to what Jaden Daniels did when he won the Heisman. And that doesn't mean he needs to go win the Heisman. It means 1,000 yards with your legs and 3,000 plus yards passing. And the SEC, that's a great season for any quarterback anywhere. I mean, Cam won the Heisman and still didn't throw for 3,000 yards in a year where they won every game. That he did lead the SEC in rushing with 1,400 yards, though. And if you look at what Jaden Daniels was able to do, he was just so dynamic with his legs and with his arm. The quarterbacks that he's up against are Chambliss, Arch Manning, right, and Stockton at Georgia. Those are the guys who have a marked advantage on him of returning to systems where they were already highly successful. So if you're going to be the best quarterback in the entire SEC, it's going to be because he can do something that those other guys can't do. And to me, that's running the football and continuing to pass at a high level. So he's got to be the best dual threat in the country if he wants to be the best quarterback in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what's the biggest difference that you've seen in spring, Auburn under Alex Golish compared to Hugh Freeze. What's one thing that really stands out to you?
Offensive practice looks organized and run right. Now, I saw this with my own eyes, but Peyton Thorne told me that offensive and defensive practice felt like two different football teams. That when you watch the defense, Durkin had his guy. This is an offensive guy, right? Saying that the defense, they want to play for their coach and they're organized and he's prepared. He comes to meetings prepared. And then on the offensive side, it's just they don't have that, right? Like there were reportedly meetings that Hugh Freeze wasn't in that Peyton said he was accustomed to his head coach, especially their offensive guy, being in those meetings. And now you've got a head coach who is intimately involved in things on offense. They run this drill during the spring, Mike, where it's the wide receivers kind of versus the DBs. It's a hit drill where wide receiver has the ball, they run over some pads, and then they square up with a DB. And last week, Golish told us that they have to have the most violent freaking receivers in the SEC. I said freaking because that's the word he used. Nerd. And so he said, we got a violent freaking receiver. We got to play violent at wide receiver. And it's not often that you hear a coach use that word, you know, to describe wide receiver play. But he's saying that because you've got a running quarterback, and to get him loose on the edge, you need receivers that are going to block on the edge. And to block, you need to be violent. Cody Burns knows that. He was out there blocking on the edge for Cam Newton when he ran for 1,400 yards in the SEC. So he understands this concept very intimately. And so the big change is that there is a system on offense that everybody is bought into, coaches and players. Now, somebody's going to watch this because, Mike, let me tell you something. Every time I do your show, a thread is started on a message board that says, Mike G said that, you know, I don't know, Bin Laden invented electricity. Like, it's something completely ridiculous that I did not say. So I want to be very clear about what I'm going to say here. Not everybody was bought in to how Hugh Freeze was doing things, and it showed up on Saturdays. Now, if you're asking, Mike, what evidence do you have of that? I'm not going to say what other people told me, but I would ask you to look at the difference between the last game Hugh Freeze coached and the first game where Derek Nix called plays all on his own. So Kentucky, they lost that game 10-3 to Kentucky, Mike. I'm making the stink face because that's how much it stunk.
Kentucky. And did they get the three because Kentucky turned it over and they got a field goal?
I think Elijah Melendez, the freshman linebacker, got an interception, and that set him up for the 3 points, the yeah. only 3 points that they scored. The next week, and Ashton Daniels, they started Ashton Daniels, so Jackson Arnold was benched. Right. Ashton played like crap, and we're thinking, God, man, how is it that we missed on all the quarterbacks? This is insane. The next week, DJ Durkin, as interim, says, Derek Nix is going to call plays. I get involved in that. He's got it. And I said on my show, I said, guys, what if Auburn drops 40 on Vandy? And again, everyone started cursing my name, saying, what have you seen from them to suggest that they could score 40 on an SEC team or a conference opponent? And I said, guys, I think you guys are underestimating what a difference a change in play callers can make and approach. And sure enough, Derek Nix gets the reins and he starts doing things we have not seen all year. He's going zero in the backfield, and we're like, whoa, wait a minute. You went, Freeze recruited all these receivers, Mike, and then ran 12 personnel a majority of the time he was here. And I did not get that. And then Nick says, we're going to use all these skill guys. And then they went and scored 38 on Vandy and lost in overtime. And they scored, God, look at how they scored over those last three games. Even the Iron Bowl, it was a marked difference in offense over the last three games with just a change in play callers. So if he gets the chance to do it his way and he starts doing things that we didn't see all season after his boss got fired, that tells you that they weren't on the same page about how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I don't, the evidence is there of this. And I think that that's going to pay dividends for Auburn this fall, is having a head coach and an offensive coordinator and a quarterback that all are buying into the philosophies on offense and how to do it. So, you know, hopefully it works. Hopefully it produces the same results that it did at USF, you know, with some improvement, because if we see the best version of Byron Brown that we've seen yet, Auburn should hammer the over here at 6.5, man. I take it now before they move it.
Now, one thing you haven't talked about, though, Mike, and I know this is a huge question mark, I guess you would say, this offseason. What about the offensive line? That's totally retooled. I know it's very, very early, but any early returns on how that unit's looking?
They had 17 guys battling it out this spring for a chance to play offensive line at Auburn in the fall. Mike Golish said he wants to get it down to 8 by the end of spring. One guy that they like, Stanton Rommel, he was off to the side. I went to practice this morning. He was indoors kind of rehabbing and trying to get back there. They really like this kid. I think he's definitely going to be in the starting 5 come fall. It's a battle. It's a battle right now, but they feel like they have an elite process there. And this line doesn't have to be perfect. They just need to be a little better than average. And as long as they can pass protect at an acceptable level, Byron Brown will cover you on the rest. And Alex Golish and Joel Gordon will call this offense in a way that covers their offensive line's weakness. One of the most frustrating things I think that I've witnessed at Auburn over the last few years is knowing that your offensive line can't pass protect, and then watching the coach call play after play, slow developing play action plays that require the line to hold up for that extra second that they can't. And so the quarterback's running for his life or trying to make something happen. And that will be the difference between great and elite for Byron Brown. If he's going to be elite, it's going to be because his offensive line is giving him time to figure out how to do that. If he's going to be just great, it's going to be because the line is giving up too much pressure and he's having to dance around back there and dodge 3 guys before he can figure out what to do with the football.
Right.
So the offensive line, I think, is making progress this spring, but there's still a long way to go. And I don't think that we're going to be able to settle on this discussion until fall camp.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I would add to that, you know, obviously Tennessee runs this offense, but Ole Miss under Kiffin, Mississippi State, Jeff Lovey, all these offenses are similar. I don't mean to disparage the linemen at those schools, because they've had a lot of good linemen, but they're not littered with all SEC players. This offense really helps the offensive line. And it really keeps defensive lines really worn down, so, which, again, helps the offensive line.
It does. It does. Mike, you know, if you watch the Patriots under Tom Brady, their short passing game was like their running game, for many, many years. It was just one step, two step drop, and the ball is just out before your pass rush can really do anything. And they would catch the ball for 4 or 5 yards and then keep it. And it was always 3rd and short because the quarterback was accurate. The receivers were right where they needed to be. And the line never really looked under fire because they just never asked them to do much. What people don't understand about like how long 3 seconds is to block against a defensive lineman, especially in the SEC with these big monsters coming at you, it's a lifetime. Pro Football Focus keeps the time to throw stats on every quarterback. Go look at the top of the SEC. The average time to throw for the top quarterbacks when they complete passes is about 2.5 seconds. That's it. After 2.5 seconds, bad things are happening for most quarterbacks. So you got to get the ball out of your hands, man, and stop asking your line to block for 3-4 seconds. It's not realistic at all. It's just not. So you need a play calling system that has some, here's another thing we saw over the last 3 games. people were like, can Auburn throw a pass over the middle? Like, does the middle of the field exist? Do they know that they can run between the hashes and catch balls there? And then three games left, and then suddenly they're running all these little routes over the middle. We're completing them, and everyone's like, where has this been all season? You know, and then the line looks so much. Nobody's talking about the offensive line not being able to block because you're throwing these little intermediate routes over the middle and they're being caught. And they're going to fix a lot of fundamental things, and it's going to look like a huge improvement. Everyone's going to be like, oh my God, what a turnaround. And the truth is that they had the talent to do this the whole time. You just need a system and a coach, right? That, you know, makes sense for what you're trying to do.
We haven't really talked much at all about the defense under DJ Durkin. Do you anticipate, much of a drop off there? I know they lost some guys, but they're still massively talented. And are they saying anything? Because they would know better than anybody, I would imagine, the defensive players, of just how better the offense looks in practice. Have you got any thoughts on what they're saying about what this Auburn offense is going to look like?
Yeah, look, Dirk, Golish was asked a question about which side of the ball is winning. And I've heard coach after coach say this. In the spring, you never really get too excited when one side is dominating, right? Because it could mean that maybe your offense is that good or maybe your defense is that bad. You know, it's tough. The defense is winning their fair share, but they're saying the offense is winning their fair share as well, too. So Auburn has potentially one of the best linebacker groups in the conference next year with DeMarcus Riddick and Xavier Atkins and Elijah Melendez. Riddick was, he had a little bit of a disappointing sophomore campaign, but, former five-star guy there. Xavier Atkins emerged as first team all SEC. He was one of the best players in the country last year. So he returns, and then Melendez burst on the scene as a freshman. Oh my goodness, he's got tremendous upside. So Auburn has questions, I think, at defensive back and along the defensive line, but they made improvements in other areas. Where I have supreme confidence in DJ Durkin is that no one was talking about Xavier Atkins in the preseason, but boy, the preseason lists aren't the list you want to make. It's the postseason list that you want to make. And I have no doubt that there will be a name or two that we're not talking about right now that we'll be talking about at the end of the year. And you rehire DJ Durkin because you don't have any questions about his process. He's going to produce stars. We may not see them right now, but they're fleshing that out right now this spring.
All right, and then one last thing I wanted to ask you. Golish is apparently they got a daily focus on the Iron Bowl. I love it. Cousin Shane hates it. How's the Auburn family? How are they taking this daily focus on some aspect preparing for the Iron Bowl?
Yeah, it's an Iron Bowl period in practice, right? This is something that recognizes the importance of that game here. You're honoring the rivalry and the tradition, but having an Iron Bowl period in practicing is about learning how to finish. It's your last game every year. You know it. I know it. It's the last game you play every year. And I think Golish understands. Look, man, coaches get fired for not being able to beat Alabama. Lose that game too many times in a row, and you're going to be on the chopping block. If there's any one thing that he has to do here is he's got to start to turn the conversation around the Iron Bowl. Auburn has been competitive in this game at home, but you haven't won enough of them. I mean, they haven't won it since 2019. So this is a pretty long drought, and hopefully that ends under Alex Golish. So I like it. I think most Auburn fans like it. Golish has done a really good job, I think, trying to honor the positive past at Auburn. But he wants people to know that the negative from these previous years have nothing to do with what he's building. And I think that that's fair. I'm a new coach here. And so whatever Hugh Freeze did or whatever some coach did before me, that's what they did. Don't put that negative juju on us this year. You should expect a different team out the gate. And hopefully that pans out, man. I mean, again, that's why I think you bring Byron Brown here. And so that you can show fans that immediately. Look, man, I'm going to bring my guy in here, and he may only have 1 year left, but we're going to make it a really damn good year.
Mm-hmm.
So buckle up. We're going to go out, and we're going to win our fair share of games and hopefully win some that nobody expects us to win because they thought they got caught up in what Auburn was. This is what I tried to tell Baylor fans before the Baylor game last year. They didn't want to listen. They got caught up in the losing record that Auburn was. And they said, oh, well, this game, these teams are evenly. No, they're not evenly matched. We're better than you. You're Baylor. This is Auburn. And even in a losing season, they were still leaps and bounds better than Baylor. So I this is going to get clipped. And if Auburn loses in September, I'm going to get killed. I don't care. Even if they lose the game, I will still say they were better than you and the refs cheated or something. It get hailed that day, or I don't know. But I do think that you cannot look at what Auburn has been these last 3 years and put that what they're doing is so different. It should produce different results.
One last thing for you, Mike. Really appreciate your time. I know it's April 9th, so we're not going to hold you to this. By April 10th, you could change your answer and we'll be fine with it. What is Auburn's record in 2026, first year under Alex Golish? What would you say today?
8-4.
Okay.
I think it's 8-4, and I think they do pull off somehow 2-2 in October, and I think it's 8-4. I think it's 8-4. There's going to be a win nobody expects on this schedule. And there's going to be a frustrating loss because it's year one. I would not be surprised if they do something silly like losing to Mississippi State or Arkansas. I would not be surprised at that. And we'll see. And I'm targeting those games because beginning of November, you know this, you've been covering it. You know, the war of attrition, man, starts to set in. Injuries, all kind of things are happening around that time of year. And right now, those teams, they're respectively, I think, the bottom of the SEC in terms of who they expected to win the conference. So when you look at the FanDuel odds, Mississippi State is getting plus 20,000 and Arkansas is getting plus 22,500. They're expected to be the absolute non-cream of the crop of the SEC. But I would not be shocked if the Tigers dropped the game and one of those teams ended up being better than we thought. But otherwise, I think there's a chance they clean September. I can see them winning every single one of those games. And I think maybe you get LSU and Ole Miss. I think those are the two games in October that Auburn has a chance to get. LSU's at home. Ole Miss is Ole Miss. You know, no Lincoln. We'll see how it really works with Pete Golden as head coach. But I think he could get those two games and have a chance to go on a run in November. If this team is 6-2 going into November, they might have a chance to put together something special. And 8-4, they may beat 8-4 if they can avoid the inexplicable loss.
So
remember, Brian Harsin was 6-2 going into his first
that's
November.
That's right. If Auburn beats Bama, does that mean they're probably 9-3?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say if Auburn beats Bama, there's a chance that these guys surprised and they might be in the college football playoff.
I don't know if you saw it. I picked Bama to go 7-5, lose to Auburn. So there you go. I'm sure your audience will like that.
Really? 7-5? I like that. But I will tell you, 7-5 is difficult for me to say they're going to go 7-5. But that's they have an over-under at 8.5.
Yeah.
So 7-5 is not unrealistic. They've got question marks that they haven't had there in a long time in the offseason. It's not to say that they're not going to have a great quarterback, but I think that's going to be tested about, you know, whether he can pick and develop the right quarterback in the SEC, Kalen DeBoer. I don't know, man. The Tide, do you have their schedule? Can we look at their schedule real quick? I know you probably got it loaded.
Yes.
They got their butts whooped by Florida State last year. That was like Gus's parting gift to Bama.
So I picked them. I think on Find Them, I think I picked them to lose to Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, LSU, and Auburn.
That's a look. Georgia to LSU is a tough stretch. Wow. That's a really tough stretch. And you mentioned this earlier in the segment. Like, most SEC teams have a four-game stretch like this. So I don't see it here, but which one of these games home, oh, it is because you marked them, right? So you've got Georgia at home and you've got A&M at home, but you got to go on the road to Tennessee and LSU.
Bama hasn't won in Neyland since like 6 years ago either.
Oh my goodness. Listen, the downfall of Bama is I've been praying on it for the last 10 years, and hopefully it comes this year. But 7-5, that Bammers are going to come after you on Twitter. I can see that now. So make sure you tag me when you post that graphic.
No doubt.
Tag me, Mike me when you post that graphic. Yes, I want to be tagged in that one. That's going to be amazing engagement.
So before you go, Mike, tell my audience how they can follow you and how they can find the War Report.
Well, you mentioned the Alex Golish interview. If you're an Auburn fan, you hadn't seen that yet, just go on over to YouTube, subscribe to the channel. We're the War Report on every social media platform. We are TW Report on TikTok. Follow me at Mike Gittins on Twitter, at Mike Gittins _ on Instagram. Lots of great off-season content coming here for you guys.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike. That was fantastic.